it's worth mentioning again here in this context that often when we think of discipleship in the church, we think specifically about things like Sunday school classes or small group ministries. As Kevin Watson in our first session talked about, cognitive learning environments. And that those things are great, and we absolutely need to be becoming disciples by learning what it means to be a Christian, by studying the Bible and all of those things. But if you think about the way that the 12 disciples were discipled by Jesus, only part of that discipleship experience happened in a learning environment. The other three-quarters of it, or half of it, happened through engagement with the community, going out amongst the people, hearing what their problems and issues were, and attempting to bring, as we're saying today, the kingdom of God, right, to the midst of the need that they had. So just as learning the Bible is essential to discipleship, so is learning to express mercy. So as studying scripture and memorizing it is essential to discipleship, so is learning to offer justice. Just as prayer is essential to discipleship, so is learning to go and help your neighbor, right? And so that's what this session is sort of going to be about, is how discipleship and community connect with one another. And one of the things that I think is so unique about this opportunity, I've never been at a panel like this, and so we were excited as a council to bring it to you, is that we have pastors on this panel and who are, you know, making disciples in their context, and then we have people from the community, community leaders that are part of it as well, that are going to be able to talk about their partnerships with churches and also just the needs and their experience in law enforcement and education and in the city. And what we hope that you can imagine when you go back to your context, up here we have a rural environment represented, we have a small town environment, we have an urban environment represented here on this panel. All of these people you see up here, there's a version of them in your community, and they have the same kinds of needs and problems and situations that will be represented on this panel. That you can do a lot of the same things, or you know, imagine new ways of doing these things in partnership with kingdom work that's already happening in your community itself. Okay? So that's kind of what we're here to do. And Jessica, do you want to introduce our panel?
Yes, so we have, starting down here at this end, Melanie Davison, the instructional specialist at Hazelwood School District, and Pastor Kyle Rainbolt, the pastor of Trinity Church of Nazarene. Then we have Chief Matthew Eskew, the Chief of Police at Wright City, and Pastor Joe Pearl, the pastor of the Wright City Church of Nazarene. Then we have Scott Meyer, the Cape Girardeau City Manager, and Pastor Jason Hill, pastor of the Church of Nazarene Cape Girardeau. So we just have an hour today, and so we are going to do our best to cover a lot of ground in that time, and hopefully leave some time at the end for questions that you might have. So we'll go ahead and get started. Our first question is for the pastors on our panel. Can you tell us, how did your relationship with your agency representative get started, and how did you make that connection? And maybe, Joe, since you're already holding the mic, maybe you could get us started.
I moved into the community in Wright City about 7 years ago, and I was previously, in my previous assignment, a police chaplain. And so I looked to see if there were some open doors there in my community that I wouldn't be at, to see if that would be available. And I went and talked to the police chief, who was a different chief at the time, and he really didn't know. He really didn't have a good idea of that. He was new, getting involved in that position, and so I said, well, let's think about it, let's talk about it. We were ready, and I said, I'll check in on it next month, and I talked to him next month, and he still wasn't ready, and I did that for about 5 months. I went and talked to him about once a month, and after that, he was open to hearing him talking to me, and was convinced, and so that's kind of how it started.
For us, it's the elementary that is closest to our church building. Our church building actually is just around the corner. And the main school that we partner with is between here and there, actually on the road, coming out of this this church building. And for us, it really started slowly. We just had a couple of people who cared deeply about the community and about the school, and so they just went in and started doing small things. And I think for us, that was kind of the key to our partnership, is that we went in willing to say, how can we serve you? Not going in saying, this is what we're going to do, is that okay? And so whether it was cleaning up the school grounds, if it was feeding teachers, everybody likes food, and so we were willing to do teacher appreciation, just feed teachers and tell them how much we were thankful that they were there. And then slowly that began to grow out of that, some mentoring and tutoring and some other opportunities. But really just started slowly. And we were willing, actually just a few of our people who aren't paid on staff, just lay leaders who said, look, we need to make a difference in our local school. And so they took the step. It wasn't someone in leadership. It wasn't someone who had a title. It was just someone willing to say, look, we want to serve our local school, and to go in and begin that conversation with them.
Great. Jason?
Well, we actually have two types of partnerships here that I want to talk about briefly. The first one is sort of one that developed when we first came, and now is progressive. And the other one is just sort of starting as we're beginning to work with the city. But when we first came, Jessica and I first came to Cape Girardeau. We came from Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I was an associate pastor. And when we were in Tulsa, our church there had developed a really positive relationship with the domestic violence shelter in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so when we came to Cape and we were looking to kind of get connected in the community and find out a way that our church could begin to sort of look outside its doors, it was natural for us to approach the domestic violence shelter in Cape Girardeau, which was called the Safe House for Women. And so one Wednesday, Jessica and I went over and met with the executive director that was there at the time and just kind of introduced ourselves and asked questions about Cape and what the needs were. And then we just simply asked them, how could our church help your organization do what you're already doing here? And one of the things that they said, among the many different ways that we could help, was that they were looking for board members. And they wanted a clergy representative on the board. And one of the best decisions I think I've ever made in my life was look at Jessica and say, hey, this is something you'd probably be interested in. Why don't you serve on the board of the Safe House for Women? And how would you take it?
So I did.
Started in law enforcement about 16 years ago. When I came to Wright City, we did have a chapel. I remember going to my sergeant and saying, I have to have a guy right around the car with me all day long. That's what we're going to do. You know, the sergeant looked at me and says, yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen. So in law enforcement, as an officer, because we see people at their worst, I mean, some of the things that are seen is just absolutely awful, as I'm sure some of you as well. But we're not a very trusting group right off the bat. It takes us a little while to get to the point where we trust you. And next thing I know, through these ride-alongs that I had to drag this guy around with me, which at the time wasn't Pastor Pearl, it was Dan Munn. It just got to the point where all of a sudden I absolutely had an outlet. I had somebody that I could talk to and I could pass that along. When Pastor Pearl came in and was interested in this, I was a sergeant at that time. I had been promoted. And the chief came to me, who, again, as he said, was at a point where he was just starting. He looked at me and said, well, is this something we should even worry about? And based on my experiences with having that outlet and having somebody there for me, it was absolutely a good thing. And it's continued to be a good thing.
I'm Melanie Davidson, and I at my school partnered with Kyle. And as he mentioned, it started off small, and we're working with small kids because it's K-5. And when you ask kids what they need, the biggest thing they say is they want somebody to talk to. They want somebody to love them no matter what. And when you can provide that to a child who doesn't have a parent, who has an absent parent, or who doesn't have any parents at all, and you have where we serve, we have kids that, and often everywhere now, but has been for a while for us, you know, we have grandparents raising them, and they just want somebody to give them time. And I love being a teacher. I've been a teacher for 20 years, but I've also been the teacher, the nurse, I always laugh because I run around like a chicken with my head cut off. And I try very hard to listen to every child, but when you have four waiting there, sometimes it's often that I had to cut things off and say, okay, you know what, you screw things on, if you have children, you do that. And when you put these mentors in place, the lives of those children that were placed with them changed dramatically. We had girls that cried every single day, and we put her with a mentor, and the crying stopped. She smiled every day. It made such a huge impact on that child's life. And it introduced her to Christianity also. Now that wasn't our main purpose, but that's just a plus for our family. And, you know, we also had kids that, you know, we had one of our camp people got with them, girls who hadn't been raised, to where they understand social etiquette, and they ate lunch with them, and they helped put things in place that made it easier for them when they grew up to be a young lady. And, you know, they shared things, and the mentors gave them little trinkets that are really nothing to some people, but it meant the world to them too. And it made them feel special. It gave them a sense of identity that they were missing in their life. And so it's a wonderful thing to partner up with schools, because they're getting it at such a young age, and then as they get older, then they become the mentor or the mentee for other people, you know, because we're planting the seed. And it was also nice to see when the Pat Red, we partnered up, and I'm a talker, they would see people come in and mentor, and they would say, oh, who was that? And then I would say, oh, that's one of our mentors, our tutors. We had a tutoring program. The parents would talk about it. I would then say, hey, are you interested in it? And then, not just from the church, other people started to grow, and it got bigger in our mentor program. We ended up with the most Hazelwood heroes in all of the school. They weren't all from the church. They were just from out throughout the community. And it was a wonderful thing. One of the board members said, how do you get so many people? And I responded to, ask if you shall receive. So it was a blessing. It starts small and gets bigger.
Scott.
started thinking about ministry, she said, first of all, think about what breaks your heart. So today, think about what breaks your heart. Is it that little kid that is being bullied or abused, or is it the puppy, or is it, you know, what is it? Is it the trash alongside the road? There's a ministry for you. So why am I as a city manager interested in partnering with churches or people in ministry? It's because government is limited. We're limited by finances. You know, that's one of the big things. You don't want to take all your money in taxes. That's, you know, we believe in limited government. We believe there's not enough money to do that. So we are limited in finances. Second, we're limited by our government itself. There are things that government cannot do to treat oftentimes. It's the root cause of the problem. So we are treating the very end of the things that fall through. It's their worst day. It's the worst day of the family, so that's what happens. So our workers, public servants, would love to treat more at the root cause, and that's what I see as an opportunity with churches especially, is to treat the root cause. The root cause, that's what you're talking about, is really working in that area, and I think we can highlight some of those. But I'll just tell you a couple of things, really quick, easy things that you can be a part of. You can be a part of Humane Society, and we help support the steakhouse rooms, some of them that we help support. Come alongside the agencies that already exist. All of them need help, and if you go volunteer, if that's breaking your heart, you go and ask for help, they will find you something to do. But just adopt a street, pick up trash. You can do park cleanup, you can do community garden, you know, community gardens. Just some things that are pretty easy to do.
I would just add from the Safe House nonprofit perspective, very similar theme, I think it's emerging here, which is start small with what you already know, which I think makes it much less scary and more attainable. But from the perspective of the Safe House, we were looking for assistance with really practical things like helping keep our food pantry and our hygiene closet stocked, and helping our clients find Thanksgiving dinner that they can provide for their families. And then it turned out that we needed a place for our support group to meet on Tuesday evenings, because we had outgrown our own facility for that. And so the Church of the Nazarene started hosting our support group, and they've been there for, gosh, 3 years probably at least. And the ladies tell our counselors that they love meeting in our church because it makes them feel safe. And so they love to be there. So then this year, not only did they want to continue to have support group there, but they also want to have our annual client banquet. We have, it's called Beautiful You, and we have volunteers from the community who come and do haircuts, manicures, chair massage. We give out all kinds of clothing, makeup, makeovers, all that kind of stuff. And they asked if we could have it at the Nazarene Church this year because they like being here so much. So that is it's basically like a whole other facility for us, because our space is very limited, and it's also a whole other source of support for us. The church adopts families for Christmas and provides Christmas gifts for the kids and the moms. And then they also, we have at our Christmas brunch every year, we collect sort of nicer items like perfumes and fancy soaps and those kind of spa type things. And we have a shelf in our shelter, and when a mom is having a birthday, their child is able to go down there and pick out a present for them and wrap it up so the child can give it to their mom for their birthday. And a lot of times it's the first time they've ever been able to do that. So it's just really practical, simple things like that that makes a big impact on our agency. Okay, back to the pastors. How are you involving your congregation in these ministries? And maybe you can touch on things like, is it congregation-wide or through smaller groups? And is it ongoing or periodic? So, Kyle, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, there's always an invitation for everyone to be involved. People just are able to do what they're gifted in and time, what kind of time they're able to give. And so it's ongoing and periodic. And so we have some people who do mentor and tutor kids. And we have tried to be really flexible with the school. And so I think that's really important as we serve any sort of organization, is to be good listeners and really go in almost submissive to them in the sense of what can we do to help you. I think too often we go in with a plan and say, this is what we're going to do, and it doesn't always work that way. And so we've adapted the way we read with kids, and even this last year they came and said, we love that you read, but we're doing a different reading plan, so really we don't need you to read anymore. Would you just mentor kids? Would you just meet with them? So we have a group of people we've invited to be a part of that. We have people who also do the meals for teachers. But through that partnership, we've been able to extend it to some other things. So we have a Nazarene Compassionate Ministry Center as well called the Power of County. And we have a soccer league. And almost every day I'm in the school with Cold Water. We have kids who play in our soccer league that have come from Cold Water. But we do an affordable Christmas store. And we partner with that school, and many of their families are able to come and shop. So there's some periodic things. But we're always trying to encourage our people to look at ministry outside of the where is there a need? Where are there people that can use time, use a person to be able to just talk to, use hands to just do a project? And so it's both. And so I think whether you're a pastor or a lay leader, or you're just someone who's trying to get involved, you just have to figure out what works for you. And you have to figure out what you're gifted in, what your passions are, and just figure out how that intersects with the needs of your community.
Jason.
Well, one of the unique things about our relationship with the Safe House for Women First is that in this situation, it's women who are escaping violence, a violent situation, usually at the hands of a man. Now, there are male victims of domestic violence as well, but Jessica can talk about that at some time. And so, in some ways, we're sort of limited in the ways that all of our congregation can be involved. And so what we try to do is provide a variety of opportunities. And so in the past, some of our men have volunteered to do work at the shelter or at the outreach office. A lot of our people really enjoy construction and maintenance and repair. We've got individuals who are talented in that. And so probably 4 or 5 years ago, we came over and we renovated the offices at the shelter. And so that was an area where our men could be involved. And then our ladies are involved in from doing drives to collecting food. One of the biggest things that the whole church has been able to be a part of, this also kind of comes from a city perspective, is that when we began to talk with agencies and get involved with what's happening in the city of Cape Girardeau, we discovered that very few agencies provide any kind of assistance or food for Thanksgiving. And so one of the things that we began to do is we started offering a food ministry was begin to have a Thanksgiving service followed by a Thanksgiving meal. So we didn't come to our church and you get a free Thanksgiving meal. And then we send baskets of food home with those families so that on Thanksgiving Day they can prepare and cook an entire Thanksgiving meal and sort of worship, and we offer thanks around our own table at home. And so that's been one way for us to kind of involve the whole community in a city-related need, our whole church, men and women and everyone in between, because we have people that pack the bags and kids that help serve the food and all of those things that are involved in that. So we try to involve as many different people as we can in as many different ways as we can, each with their own skill set.
We have a variety of different ways that we connect with the police department, really with the city. We really try to partner with them on common goals. How do we make a positive impact in the community? We're both looking for ways to do that. And sometimes it's helping them connect, especially, as we mentioned before, with limited finances. They have a limited budget, just as we do. How can we partner to help each other in those ways? And sometimes it's me as a chaplain providing counseling for them, providing opportunities. advocate of victims for that. Sometimes, one time, the police department needed to replace a floor, and they needed to get out of the building for a week so the flooring could be replaced. And they set up shop in the church. And so, free of charge, no cost, they could move over there and do business. Now, we really didn't tell everybody that that's what was going on, but that's what was happening. So, opportunities for them to have a low-cost option of that. And then we also partner in different ways. Those are individually, but as a church, we have a 9/11 service where we invite first responders in. We have a worship service. We say thank you to them. We have a dinner for them. It's a way to say thank you. It's a way the first responder community rarely gets together as one body. And this is one time where we bring them together and recognize a significant event that affects them continually. And we help them recognize that and we say thank you for that. We also partner with them in other areas. When there's a disaster or when Highway 70 got iced over and got shut down, all of a sudden our community needed a shelter for those that were stuck. Chief reached out to me and said, we need somebody to go to a shelter in 2 hours. And we did. And so we're partnering in ways that our resources can share together. So in many ways on a personal level, in different ways as a congregational level.
One thing I just want to kind of pick up on what we sort of heard here is one of the things that we talk a lot as churches is about going out and doing ministry, right? And that's a good thing, absolutely a good thing. But at the same time, we should recognize that our churches, most of them, are already in the middle of a community, right? And so in some ways, we can simply offer peace and love and mercy simply by making our space that we've created available to our community to serve the needs of the community. Now, one of the things that involves is relationship on the front end, right? Because if you look at the right city, the city and the police knew to come to Joe, right? Because they had that relationship. The Safe House for Women knew to come to us when they needed space because that relationship was already in place. Relationship forms the foundation of it, but peace can come through going out and then also inviting in to be with you where you currently are.
It wasn't as come in, and so we are trying that. We're trying to make it look more friendly in the essence of coming, because when you come in, it's very friendly, very welcoming, and everybody is wonderful. So I was at a project this morning where we were doing beautification. We also have partnered up where we help people do school before school starts, getting businesses to donate school supplies so that our kids don't have to do without. So those are some of the new partnerships we have with PASC and Treasury.
Scott.
We have country churches that minister in our city. I mentioned earlier about adopting community gardens and those type of things. But then we also have people that just love on some of our people that, again, they have a passion for. We have people that come by the police station and bring them cookies or buy them lunch or at a restaurant or somebody does that. That means a lot to our first responders. Right now, especially in the last 5-10 years, they've had a tough time. And I tell the story a lot when I go, is used to, you talk to officers, they would say, you'd ask them, well, what's your son or daughter going to do? They'd all say, they're going to be an officer too. Now then, almost to 100% of them say, the last thing I want to do is that. That's a huge change. And that's a huge mindset change, and some of them are generational. Now that's going to stop because of how they've been treated by some communities and some places. We're lucky in Cape Coral, they're treated well and loving on them and everything. So, and you can do that with the street people and the trash people, everybody. You can do that with. We also have groups that make the water bill that contribute to help people with the water bill. So, you think about that and you can do that because you can find out. That's something that you can do. We have groups that do that as well. Right now, one of the things that we're working on are our neighborhoods. We have an initiative that I started called Neighborhood Development Initiative. And we've gone into two neighborhoods and we said that we want to redevelop these neighborhoods because they've kind of lost their soul. And so we're trying to rebuild neighborhood. The day when people got out on the porches and talked to them, the day when somebody had a problem and their neighbor walked across the street helping them with a problem. The story I always tell is, you see your neighbor isn't cutting their grass. Yes, you can call a nuisance officer, and they'll come out and we will cite them. You know what? What if you walked across the street and you find out why they're not cutting their grass? What if you found out that somebody in their house has cancer, they don't have time to cut their grass, then you cut the grass for them. Wouldn't that change your name? And so we're trying to move them toward what we're calling self-governance. So let's try to govern ourselves first. And there's something special about that. And that usually happens, most of you in the room, probably when you went out in your neighborhood and you did something wrong, somebody else's parents told you not to do that anymore. That doesn't happen anymore. We want to rebuild that in our communities. That's what the Neighborhood Development Initiative is all about. And that's happening through churches. Churches are being involved in it. One of the interesting things that I will say in one of our experimental areas, there's a church that's taking a lead role and everybody's got to fall in line. And the other one is almost like there is jealousy between the churches. And they're saying, well, I'm going to do it this way, and I'm going to do it this way. You said earlier, you're coming in and saying, how do you want us to do it? How can we serve you instead of we're going to serve you this way? That's absolutely key. I'll stop here a second because I'm going along. We're also in an initiative called Works Build Communities, and in there they have a proverb. I think it's an African proverb that says this: "What you do to me, but what excuse me, what you do for me, but without me, you do to me." And nobody wants to have stuff done to them. So you have to go in and you have to become their friend first. You have to build a relationship first. You have to take the time to do that and show them you care and build that trust. And then you say, well, what do you need? And that's what we're saying. And that little infighting that's happening, and it really just keeps it from happening. It really keeps that neighborhood from really breaking through. And we're working on that. So I would say as churches, if you can get involve the neighborhood. But start with the neighborhood you're in, or where your your members are, and get involved.
Remembering to keep them having their pride is important, because everybody gets down on their luck. And I feel that, I think that what you said, your passion, whatever your passion is, that's what you should do. But when you don't go in and judge, you're equal to them, and just say, thanks for letting me help you. Mm-hmm. You know, thanks for letting me help you. It made a difference in my life. Mm-hmm. So then they don't feel put down, because they will never ask for help again if they feel put down.
So in Wright City, we also have several church organizations. But realistically, those didn't really become a resource to us, honestly, until Chapman was involved, Pastor Ken was involved. He's done a great job in kind of rallying the troops, so to speak. And you know, we were always friendly. We'd drive by, I would stop in, say hello to the church, so on and so forth. But as a police department, the last thing we want to do is become an inconvenience and be begging and asking for help. But the one thing I will say is, we kind of touched earlier on, it's a slow process to get started. Well, what we didn't mention, and I'm going to speak for the rural community, is when I talk to other agencies, larger populations, and so on and so forth, it's very interesting to me. I hear, whenever we're talking about one specific thing, I've got a guy who comes in and helps establish a shelter. I've got another guy who comes in and does this. You know, I can give several examples, but all I can say is just be prepared, because all of those topics that I'm talking about, I also have a guy for that. And I quickly reach out to the chap and say, this is what I need. And I know at times it could probably be overwhelming for him, but he's done a good job as far as reaching out to other church community in our area and saying, hey, the police department does need help with this. But it's a huge benefit to us.
At the Safe House, I would say that the Nazarene Church is definitely our biggest supporting partner as a church in our community. To the point now where when we have a need, our staff members will say, well, do you think the Nazarene Church can help us with that? And so as an example, we're building right now a new shelter. We're going from 17 beds to 40 in our community, because the need is so great and we're full so much of the time. But we've got some furniture in our current shelter that we would like to reuse and be good stewards of, but it probably needs to be refinished. And so my shelter director just came to me the other day and said, do you think that the Nazarene Church would refinish these tables for us? And I think they probably will. But we do have some other church partnerships, and I did want to mention just a couple of things. For one, we did help over 100 families with Christmas last year, our family, and that takes a lot of church support. And so several churches in our community helped us with that. The other thing is that we do get occasionally cash donations from churches. And I will tell you that sometimes we get, you know, it's like $47, $123. And I will tell you that you can go to the dollar store and buy 123 bottles of shampoo with $123, and we are grateful for that. And so if you're having some kind of event and you want to take a donation up for a local charity, they will appreciate no matter what the amount is, because that's definitely true for us. That we value so highly the volunteer time and the facility usage and those kinds of things. But if you have a little financial support to give, no matter how small, it is also very appreciated. So, okay, now what I want to do is we're just going to go down the row and start with Jason and just ask the question, how has this partnership impacted either your church or your church in your community, or your agency in your community? So we'll start here.
Well, as the discipleship director for the district, but then also a pastor of a local church, one of the things that I struggled with the most is, how do you measure something like discipleship, you know, formation? How do you measure that? Because numbers, you know, whatever, people attending a small group or whatever, that doesn't really measure the impact that you are having as a church, or the way the disciples are being made. And so what I look for is story, first of all. and just sort of the general heart and attitude of our people. And one of the things that I can say that these initiatives like working with the Safe House and all of the other things that we've done is that our people now, I don't use the word trained because that's not really right, but they are eager and anxious to respond to whatever situation is thrown our way, and they do so with excitement and with grace. Okay? So a good illustration is that Jessica just said that the Safe House wants us to help them refinish furniture. Okay? I'm just now hearing about that. It's about the fact that we're married. So my first response, and I can see from Roy and his expression back there, is we can do that, okay? We can do that, right? It's not all about I'm busy on the weekend or no. I mean, they really need our help. It's yes, we can do that. Let's find a way to get it done. And that extends beyond some of our partnerships. A great example about this has encouraged me so much. Right after Christmas, any of your churches would do this. It's just an illustration of the impact that these things have had on our church, right? Just after Christmas, we had one of our families who comes to our Sunday night kids' service. They had a fire at their trailer, and their whole trailer was destroyed. All of their possessions were destroyed and burned up. Within days, we had sort of organically organized an offering, and we went out and we replaced almost everything that family had lost. Okay? I didn't have to give up and give a bunch of sermons on the need for compassion. I didn't think I was even involved at all, actually. Our people just said, this happened, we need to take care of it, right? And that is the impact that things like this have had on the discipling community that we have in our church. It is a culture. It's who we are now, as opposed to maybe before not being the case. Maybe it was. I don't know. I wasn't around. But now, that's what we have.
No,
we're
going
to go. Oh, I can attest to the fact that before Jason and Jessica came, that we had become inwardly focused. And, sometimes the churches go through hard times, and you're just trying to pay the bills, and you can just get that inward focus. And every word that I can testify to the fact that it has become organic to who we are, and it is our first thought is to probably be helping. So that is a reaction to this. And so that's, you couldn't say it, but I could. What impact does these type of partnerships, if you will, have on Cape Cod and the city? It's a bigger pie, and so when you look at it, it's hard sometimes to think that there is an impact being made. I will say that what I have seen because of our partnerships with our partners that we have, and then with churches, that I believe that we are beginning to get a vision in some of our really struggling neighborhoods. I mean, we have neighborhoods, a couple of neighborhoods that really, we have high crime, we have homicide, and you might want a homicide for you, but for Cape Girardeau, 7 homicides, was a sentinel moment. We said no more. And so we're working on that. It's hard work. You can't just turn around and jump changing culture, trying to address generational poverty. So that burden is heavy and hard. And so try to look for data that needle moves very slowly. So encouragement is really important in that. But I do believe what I look for that indicator, I look for hope. And what I'm hearing in that neighborhood now is they have hope, and hope is eternal, and I'm very happy for that. And so that's what I have for us. But again, I just want to reiterate the fact that working with communities allows you to really leverage. Not so people think when they come to the city, they say, "Well, we're going to access a bunch of funds, so that we can do ministry. And what they really find is that we access hope through the ministry that the churches and the organizations have in our community. We hope that we provide a lot. We provide support. We did an alley sweep here a while back where we went and cleaned out. Team Challenge helped us do that. And for those people that their alleys were overgrown, it was a huge saving today. They have people getting killed in their neighborhoods and their alleys are dark and they can't see. What a big difference that makes. So anyway,
The things that have changed for us is that, our congregation helps or starts to think about budgets and think about programming by looking outside first instead of just looking about what we want to do. And it gets our eyes turned outward. And really, once we begin to look at the partnerships, we'll often say the things that need to be done are way bigger than us. And we can't even do it together. So we're so desperate, we'll just go out and partner with whoever. So we'll find other churches, we'll find other businesses. Who can partner with us to accomplish this goal? And so it's pushed us out to say, we can't solve your problem, but maybe if several of us get together, we can help solve this problem. So it's pushed us out to help find other partnerships. We just get desperate for that. But finally, it's pushed us into our community, where we say, this is just not them and them, that boy, that this couple's having trouble. These are our neighbors, and this is our neighborhood, and we, it stops here. We do whatever it takes to take care of them, because that is not just a boy, that's my boy, and that's my girl, and this is my neighbors, and we've got to do whatever it takes, because this is my backyard, and we've got to figure this out together. And so it's just all of a sudden sensing that huge amount of ownership that this is us. We have to figure this out. And that's changing. That's just changed us in one way.
So overall, it's positive. Every aspect of the program has been very positive for us. And I can give you an example of that. Pastor Crow came to the board of aldermen years ago and asked, could I pray at the board meeting? Well, because of issues of church and government and so on and so forth, it was originally very concerning to the board. However, the board decided, you know what? Right before the board meeting officially starts, that's great. That's wonderful. So Pastor Crow, either him or his wife shows up and makes sure to say a prayer. And when he comes to these board meetings, he says a prayer right before the board meeting. I know I look up every now and again, and I often wonder, who's not bowing their heads, who's not actually praying and looking for help? And I've yet to find anybody who's ever been spaced off or doing anything or very much so involved in that prayer. And I'll be honest with you, there are definitely times where that prayer will set the meeting and start the process of where we're going to go in that meeting. He says it in almost every single time that he comes in for prayer, neighbors helping neighbors. And I've heard board members and police officers, we will repeat those things, and it goes back and say, help your neighbor. Exactly as was discussed earlier, why is it your neighbors are asking, let's see if we can help that situation. Overall, it's very positive.
I know every community and city has its issues. We're in North County, and Ferguson, Hazelwood, Forreston are the main areas where we're at and our people are. If you don't know a lot about North County, a lot of people are trying to leave. And people outside of North County have a certain view of North County, where people say, yeah, I just don't have any need to go there, or I haven't ever been there. And for us, me as a pastor, this is our community, and it's a place where we won't give up on it. So I think it's changing the culture and saying that we will do all we can for our neighbors, for the people that we're connected to. The culture, the narrative has to change. And then we are going to be a church that doesn't just exist in the community. So our building isn't just in North County. And then we're not just a church that's going to be for the community, meaning we have not something for you, but we want to be a church with the community. And so just, I think one of the most important things, and Melissa down here helps leads our Compassion Ministry Center, and I've heard other people say it as well, but one of the things I hear is that, well, Trinity will say yes. Right? Trinity will say yes. Do you need a building? Do you need people? Trinity will say yes. And the thing that breaks my heart with that is too many churches don't say yes. Too many churches do have the mindset of their own kingdom. And there is a, well, we may not get credit for that. Well, what if they never come to our church? It's okay. It's okay. Just love people well, right? And so Jeremiah 29, I won't go on, but the idea of seeking the peace and prosperity of where you've been sent. And it actually says that if it goes well for them, it will go well for you. Right? And so for a lot of us, we have this idea, if we build a successful program, if we build a thing at our church, that's going to go well for the community, but it may not, because people may not know you or want to meet them. Right? And so for us, can I just encourage you, no matter what position you're in, just begin to say yes. Right? Just begin to say, I'll give up my time and my energy. One thing we say is we have, it's that we believe that we'll lead the way with radical generosity. That our local community, our global community will benefit because we're generous people. And that's not just the money, but your time, your energy, your resources, your talents. And so I think for us at Trinity, it's been slow at times, but just to build this mindset that we are with our community. We actually have the ability and the potential to change the narrative of our community.
It's hard to measure what we've done, but I guess I would have to put it into words. We blessed a kid with a bed we never had. He said, if you find me, you sleep in glass. I remember I took my red truck and I went to the Trinity Church person's house, picked up that mattress, went to that person's house, and he's like, stretched out of it. He was so excited. He was a tall, very big young man that was sitting on the floor in his grandmother's house. And we gave that kid the ability to have a bed to sleep through the night. And we've given the ability to help. One of the things I didn't mention, that is so easy, it takes no time and no money. And you all can do it in your own house, you can do it in your church, is when a woman is trying to get back in the work world, and she doesn't have appropriate clothing to go to an interview, we, many of us, have 16 of them in our closets. And we are all sizes and shapes. Donate those. Donate those not just to the Goodwill, but to other places, donate to churches, and then offer for people, put a sign out on something, if you need help to get back into the world, I'll help you with your resume. With our schools, our churches, we all have internet. Many of our parents do not. And when you can help them apply, and then they get their job, and they come in your clothing, you see it reused, you see it blessed, that's how I would measure that we're doing a good job. I moved from the church, the school that I love, to a different one, which I love too. I love, love, love it. But one of the parents was like, you made this a community, not a school. Broke my heart. I had many tears shed when I left that school, but I am hopefully it's continuing, obviously, at the new school. I'll spread my love there. But just that, you know, the little things you do, you see it, and that's my measure of we're all making a difference. Everyone in this room, if you're even thinking about doing something like this, you're making a difference in the world. You're spreading them exactly what God wants us to spread.
You said say yes. And then somebody talked about this a long time ago. I don't remember who, but one of the ways that to help you say yes more often is to, instead of saying no because, no, we can do that because we might be safe. Say yes. We can do that if we can make it safe. Yes, if, not no because. It's the same, it's almost the same thing, but it starts you on a path to yes. And it's helped me a lot.
Okay, we have just a few minutes, and we would like to take a question or two if you have one. So, open it up, raise a hand if you would like to ask our panel a question. Yes?
One of us, one of the questions is correct to the group. One of the most effective things. city manager or as a public official was to go to ministerial groups whenever the city was having to tackle a tough issue and ask those people to fervently pray not for a specific outcome, but for the perspective of the people and the attitude of the community would be malleable and flexible enough to understand the difficulty of the decision that we were having to make as a council of the city. And I can tell you that that concerted prayer by groups of pastors does make a difference in decision making in city councils and places of that nature. Never underestimate, and the chief member may be that open, but we as pastor teams and as lay people in churches can have a significant impact in other ways on what goes on in the city's life if we bring that city up as a continuing prayer effort. The second part of that is always see ourselves as neighbors